You're listening to Real World News. Energy and climate change.
Mina Raman, member of Friends of the Earth Malaysia, exposes industrialized nations at the COP15. Live simply so that others can simply live, urged former chair of Friends of the Earth International, Mina Raman, at the Climate Forum in Copenhagen. The activist participated in an activity called Feminists Against Climate Change and the Privatization of the Environment, which was organized by the World March of Women and had the support of Friends of the Earth International. The World March of Women gathers organizations from several parts of the world struggling against poverty and violence. Raman was invited to talk about what is going on in the framework of the official negotiations of the COP15 on climate change of the UN, since the activist is an expert on several issues under discussion and has been following the negotiations for years. Besides, her ability to give speeches keeps the audience alert for hours. Let's listen to Mina Raman's excellent presentation at the Climate Forum.
I'm very happy to be here. I really wish I was here, because it seems that this is where the passion, the inspiration, the joy, the spirit, and the mood of change and hope and justice seems to be present in the halls of the Klima Forum, but not in the halls of the Bella Center. So for those of you who are here, you are very lucky. For those of us who are there, we have no choice but to be there, because I think, as most of you know, the voice of civil society, both inside and outside, has to be very loud, has to be very big, has to be very strong, has to be very powerful. And as women, many of us who struggle at the local level, in our community struggles, many of us who fight to protect the rainforest with the indigenous peoples, we struggle with that fight with our sisters and mothers in the toxic battles that we fight, where in my own country, with Friends of the Earth, Malaysia, many of us are engaged with battles where women are in the forefront, fighting big multinational companies who pollute and contaminate the environment. And women are engaged in those struggles because they see what pollution does, what contamination does, not only to their own bodies, but to the bodies of their children. And I think as women, we are very, very... When we get angry, nothing will stop us. That passion, that energy, that voice. And of course, we also inspire our men. We push our men so that we share the struggle with them. So for me, for a woman who comes from the developing world, from working with communities at the ground level, having realized that many of the problems that we face around the world, which are similar, of which the climate system, the climate change crisis is part of which the Bolivian delegation spoke very eloquently in the halls of the Bella Center when the Pablo Salón, who very loudly said that the source of the crisis is the capitalistic system. And he said that in the halls of the Bella Center. You may be talking about this in this Klima Forum, but it was very good that he said it there. And for those of you I started by saying that it's quite depressing in there, but that's because of what I will unfold to you is happening. But many of us are inspired and energized by very good negotiators from the developing world. A lot of our messages, a lot of our spirit is in the halls of the negotiations. The concept of the climate debt. Many, many years ago, the whole idea of ecological debt was something that Friends of the Earth was one of the first groups to talk about, where the rich world of the 20% of the North consuming 80% of world resources, and that inequity where the rich continue to plunder the resources also apply to the atmosphere, where the fight today at the Bella Center is really about who will inherit the last remaining atmospheric space that is left, if at all there is anything left. So from the idea of ecological debt was born the idea of the climate debt, that from Friends of the Earth and now the Bolivian delegation has articulated in very technical ways, showing how for the last how many years, from Industrial Revolution to how the rich world has consumed and overconsumed and has used up the Earth's precious atmospheric space to build up the wealth that they have acquired, thus depriving the developing world of the right of the fair space that the developing world is now told that you have no more rights because we are all in a crisis together. But who was responsible for the crisis? And this is what is being debated. So the idea of the fair shares of atmospheric space, and there have been calculations that have been done. If we were all fair, if everybody had the right to atmospheric space in the same equal way, then the developed world has overshot that right, that fair share. They have taken too much, and they can no longer continue to occupy that space. But what does the developing world say? The developing world say, yes, we will, the climate is in crisis, we all agree, it's a global problem. President Obama suddenly has woken up, the United States is changing, we are out of the Bush ages, we are all going from the dark ages to the great ages. And then the Europeans, we have always been the champions of the green movement. The developed world will show you the way to a large low-carbon future. All of you have to do low-carbon future. Follow us. Yeah? That's the rhetoric that's there. The Australians, when they joined the Kyoto Protocol last year in Poznan, they got, was it Poznan or Bali? I can't remember. They got a standing ovation. Australia has woken up and become a member of the Kyoto Protocol. Let's all clap. Kevin Rudd got a standing ovation. Today, that same Australia is wrecking the Kyoto Protocol. The United States, years ago, when the Kyoto Protocol was being negotiated, the United States is a member of the UN, United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. They are a party. They are not a party to the Kyoto Protocol. But they were there when the Kyoto Protocol was negotiated. And when the Brazilians, years ago, during the negotiations on Kyoto, the Brazilians said, for all of you in the developed world, if you do not comply with the emission reduction targets, then the penalty will go into, the fine that is imposed on you will go into a fund called the Clean Development Fund. The United States said, hold on, we don't need the Clean Development Fund. We can call this the Clean Development Mechanism, where what the developed world cannot do in terms of emission reductions, we will do in the developing countries. We will give investments to the developing countries to do the emission reductions there in the developing countries. So the Clean Development Fund got changed to a market mechanism through with the involvement of this, what is called the flexibility that they get, so that if they don't reduce domestically, they can do it elsewhere. It's called offsets. And that was how the United States got us into the mess that happened. And then the US backed out. So after having led us on the wrong path, they walk out. Today, the same United States is back and engaged. Of course, we see a new president. We see a new energy. Yes, we can. Change we must. But if you look at what the United States is doing, it's also causing a huge problem at this particular moment in time. So while the rhetoric and the science says The politicians have a rhetoric where the science is very clear that we can no longer, the world in fact may have already reached tipping points in many parts of the world, the glaciers of Bolivia that many of our sisters and brothers are fighting to defend. We all know the story after story in our countries, and the prognosis for the future is just sounds like a nightmare that is waiting to be unfold as we go along. Now in all this, what has to happen and what's been happening? So the developed countries and the developing countries in Bali, which is very, very momentous, said, look, we have to negotiate the second commitment period of the Kyoto Protocol, because the first commitment period is 2008 to 2012. The next commitment period is 2013 onwards. So it's very important to negotiate the second commitment period now. So that is why there is this emphasis on the second commitment period. But if you look at the newspapers, if you particularly pay attention to the newspapers in the north, they will tell you that the Kyoto Protocol is expiring. How many of you in this room thought that the Kyoto Protocol is expiring in 2012? Please raise your hands. Yeah. Do you know that it's not expiring? You don't, because you are not told that. The reason why that spin is happening is only now being understood, because the same parties who then negotiated the Kyoto Protocol are today, the developed world, wanting to kill the Kyoto Protocol. We from developing countries, civil society, we and also from Friends of the Earth, we are not big fans of the Kyoto Protocol. But it's the only legally binding instrument. It's a legal treaty that took so long to negotiate. And that particular treaty says that the developed world must collectively set an aggregate target which they must commit to reduction. If they don't, then the penalty that has to happen is in the next commitment period they have to follow. So, it's the only law that is there that binds them. So if you kill the Kyoto Protocol, you have nothing left. The United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change is, in a sense, just a framework agreement. It doesn't say how the cutting has to happen. That's why the protocol was born. But today, the European Union, which was once the climate champion, today is saying it does not want the Kyoto Protocol. Australia, Japan, where Kyoto was negotiated, says we don't want the protocol anymore. In fact, a few times we've heard the Japanese delegation in the halls some time ago say, Kyoto, we don't like Kyoto. We feel like going to the cliff and jumping over because we're so embarrassed that it was signed in Kyoto. This is what the Japanese are saying. So we are at a moment in history where while the leaders are supposed to do the most are now backtracking. And why? This is the reason. The United Nations Framework Convention does not have obligations for developing countries to have targets. It doesn't. It's what we call a development-friendly treaty because of the common but differentiated responsibility. Those who have historically been the most responsible must take the responsibility of ensuring that they do what is required so that the developing world will have the space to do what they need to do, including through finance, the provision of finance, because even though Bolivia, Honduras, Guatemala, India, China, Malaysia, the rest of us were not responsible historically, today we are having to respond to the crisis, and that's why we need to adapt. So whether emissions are cut or not, the hurricane is coming, the frequency in climate is changing, there you have weather patterns that cannot be predicted, many parts of Africa are going through drought, so they are forced to respond to another climate crisis through no fault of their own. So they say, you must pay for the adaptation, you must pay for the technology, You must pay so that we are able to continue to do what we need to do. But this is being seen as an old, treaty. The United States, Japan and all say, the world has changed from 1992 when we negotiated, the world is new. Yeah? So therefore we have to have a new treaty. And the new treaty will have to bring in India, will have to bring in China, will have to bring in South Africa. And they call all these countries the emerging, the major emitters. But they do not look at the per capita emissions. They look at the absolute emissions. And I started with the climate debt. I started with the fair shares. And if you look at how much an Indian is consuming or how much a Chinese is consuming, they are still consuming far less than an American or a European. But this is not seen. So the United States says, if China is not there, we will not move. Because in the United States, they are obsessed with China. So we say, with or without China, you must do something. But they said, no, if not, we will not move. So the pressure is on the developing countries now that they should do much more. There is a divide and rule that is happening. They say that there are the big emitters and there are the particularly vulnerable. Now, how do they define the particularly vulnerable? They choose. It's not vulnerability defined by an objective criteria. They choose by defining who is vulnerable to influence. That's how they define what's particularly vulnerable. And then they say, we will not be able to provide all the financing because the world has changed. So we need to make sure that those of you who can, you do it by yourself. The Europeans, actually in their proposals, are saying that financing, which is a commitment from the north to south, they are saying we will only do a small part of it, which is for the particularly vulnerable. The remaining will be done by the carbon markets. So for those of us who have seen how the clean development mechanism does not work, there is now proposals to expand to a global carbon market where they want to give tons and tons of free credits to the market so that they can trade among themselves. And Friends of the Earth, the United States has done an analysis and it shows that this is going to be the next derivatives crisis, the subprime carbon. There's going to be trading in carbon in the stock exchanges. Now, how on earth are you going to solve a climate problem through trading? And this is what the climate bill of the United States is about. And in Europe, the proposal on the table is to make it global. In Australia, it's also the same thing. So they're all talking about a global carbon market. Instead of looking at taxes, because this is a bad word. Oh, our public will not like taxes. As a politician, we cannot impose environmental taxes. We cannot regulate. But we will leave it to the markets. So we are now, after having gone through a financial crisis and a debacle that has destroyed and devastated millions of lives, are supposed to have faith in the markets. And those are the proposals that they are talking about. So you see, now if you look at the forest issue as well, many of you know, many of us are fighting on the forest issue. Indigenous peoples are very worried when you have forests being discussed in the climate negotiations. Because the developed world says, we will give you money to protect your forests. But there are conditions to do that. The markets will have to be involved. And when we do it, it will be counted as our offsets. Meaning, I don't reduce. If I have to reduce by 10% here, by giving you money to protect your forest, that will be 10% of my reductions. So they are again cheating. They're using these mechanisms to actually say that they will do less because they have to do more elsewhere. And if you look at the Australians, some of the analysis actually shows that the Australians are not going to do, they're going to do zero cuts. because 100% will be offsets in developing countries. So when you listen to these people and they say the climate is in crisis, we have to do a lot more, we have to save the world and save the planet, but you really look at the details, it is absolute bullshit. So we, those of us who have to work on these issues, we show the bullshit and we say you are talking nonsense. And this is how we expose one by one. So in the halls of the climate negotiations right now, there is a strong fight, a big fight has emerged between the G77 and China, which this is not just a few developing countries, not just 77 countries. It's 130 plus countries who unite under what is called the Group of 77 in China, and they speak as one voice in many of the forums. And they have come out very strongly, and they say that many of what I am saying is unacceptable. They say fundamentally the Kyoto Protocol cannot be killed, that you in Copenhagen must commit to the next round of targets, and if you don't, there will be consequences. So this morning there was a big fight about that. They were so clear, the developing countries have been saying very loud and clear that you must commit to this, and if you don't, there will be consequences. And we have to remember, when you see the newspaper saying Kyoto Protocol is expired, they are spinning this so that when developing countries say that you need to continue the Kyoto Protocol, people are confused. They're saying, what are you talking? You're talking nonsense. The Kyoto Protocol is dying, so why are you asking for a continuation of the Kyoto Protocol? The reason is they have given us misinformation. And that misinformation is what we are trying to expose. Even the United Nations Secretariat. We went to the Secretariat fact sheets and we found the United Nations Secretariat is supposed to be the protector and the guardian of the Kyoto Protocol. And they say that the Kyoto Protocol is expiring in 2012. The Swedish presidency, we saw a package just the other day. They have a media press package. We opened the media press package and it says, we have to move to a new treaty because the Kyoto Protocol is expiring. Why this misinformation? So this is the biggest battle of our times right now. Do you ditch the protocol for a so-called new treaty, of which nobody knows whether they will be bound? The same countries who have taken us on the wrong path are now saying this is where it goes. And in the new treaty, I told you all the kinds of proposals they are talking about. This is what we cannot allow. So fundamentally, the Kyoto has to remain. And secondly, the level of ambition, the kinds of targets that they are talking about. Enough is enough. No more offsets. The world cannot afford any more offsets. The developed world has enough resources to do their domestic reductions. Change your lifestyles, change your consumption patterns if you have to. Why must some families have 3 cars or 4 cars or whatever? Yeah? When you have the poor woman in a village in India, a village in Bolivia, who doesn't even have any electricity to light her lamp. So what is this luxury? And then of course we all know about the biofuels. That our countries are now being used as land to plant, instead from food, we are planting crops so that we can oil the cars of the developed north. Now, you feed people or you feed the cars so that people can go on driving. So it makes you angry, it makes you wild. Because the negotiation, the time to change to a low carbon pathway is learn to live the lives of the developing world. Learn to live on less. And that's what's needed. So live simply so others can simply live. This was Mahatma Gandhi, he wasn't me. And his words are even more important today than ever. So there is this need to understand that the negotiations at this stage have a very critical bearing on how the world will continue to produce and consume, and we have to change that. And the other thing I wanted to also say was that the process of the negotiations. Many of you must have learnt about a Danish text that was leaked to the Guardian newspaper. Now, the United Nations Framework Convention Every year when they have a conference of parties, there is a president, and the president happens to be the Dane, the Danish Minister of Environment, the Danish presidency. As a president of the conference of parties, you are a president of every party, not the EU, not the United States. You are supposed to be impartial. You are supposed to be truly representative of the fact that everybody has an equal voice. But what has the Danish presidency done? It has produced a text. A text that some of us, when we looked at it, we were horrified. All the proposals that they are advancing are in favor of the developed countries, not the developing countries. And that is really outrageous. How can you, supposing I, as the chair of Friends of the Earth International, draft a constitution or a treaty that will only reflect the views of Friends of the Earth England? My Friends of the Earth in Latin America, I just picked on you, Joe, just for fun. My Friends of the Earth comrades in Latin America will say, what the hell are you doing, Mina? You can't do this. You are Friends of the Earth International. You have to have a democratic process. So I'm sure the World March of Women is the same. In Via Campesina, it's the same. But it's not like that in the United Nations Framework Convention, COP15. Because the Danish presidency has taken sides. So many of our groups have signed on a letter. We condemned, we criticized, we said the Danish presidency should not do this. And it's good that the press got hold of that of the text that was leaked. And now they have been criticized. And then you look at the Financial Times in England says, which is very influential, it says, well, as the host of the conference of parties, of course they can do this. Of course they have the right to go and consult with groups. First, they have to be mandated to do that. They were not given any mandate. No party in the room said, you go and draw a text. Because they are negotiating the text right now. Why would they give that mandate to the Danish presidency? Otherwise they are wasting their time. They might as well sit at home and come when the text is finished. Why bother to fly people, put them in the rooms, ask them to look at the text, spend hours negotiating while there's another text floating in the corridor? Now, will you get angry or not? How many of you are angry by now? Good. So, this process is untransparent. Prior to coming to Copenhagen, they have been having pre-COPs, pre-meetings. And in the pre-meetings, the Danish presidency has selected which countries will come. It's not an open process. It's not like in Friends of the Earth. I tell you, I go back to Friends of the Earth because I come from Friends of the Earth. And I'm sure it's the same with Via Campesina and World March for Women, where if there is a representation from the region, you go through consultation before you have a person going. Correct?
Yeah.
Here, no. The Danish presidents check. They select who comes from Africa, who comes from Asia, who comes from Latin America. Yeah? Why? What kind of a process is that? That is totally not acceptable. So this is what they have been doing. So the Financial Times is not doing a service that ought to be done by journalism, which is independent. It's not true to say those things, that there's no mandate for the Danish presidency to do that, and they cannot advance a text which is one-sided. And the other issue about the text, intellectual property rights. A very important part of the technology debate. Many of you know that intellectual property is something that those who are supposed to have invented will get a reward. But the way it's being done is that it has been abused. So much so that if you have, like in the case of drugs, AIDS medicines, if you remember, Africa needed cheap access to medicines. People are dying of AIDS, but they could not afford the medicines because they were stuck with intellectual property of patents. Very expensive. But that same medicine which is produced by Siba Geigy of Pfizer can or GlaxoSmithKline can be produced very cheaply by Cipla in India for 1/100 of that price. So you could save an AIDS patient. Because of the patents, medicines have become expensive. Same thing in the area of technologies. Developing countries are saying, yes, we need the access to technologies which is cheap, which is affordable, and which is even free from patents. Because this is an emergency. How can you talk about intellectual property rights and talk about profits and huge profits for small companies, a small group of people, when the world needs to be saved? So the developing countries, particularly led by Bolivia again, said all climate-friendly technologies must be excluded from intellectual property. Very, very good proposal. Very radical proposal. United States, raise the flag. Intellectual property is not negotiable. You cannot have it. Japan. Intellectual property is not negotiable. You cannot put it there. They say no. It's important for us. So it's not important for us? It's not important to save the world? It's important to save their companies and their profits? So that's what this is about. This is a game to profit the few at the expense of the world and the planet. So that's what's in the Danish text. The Danish text says intellectual property rights must be fully protected and respected. Now, is the Danish presidency blind or deaf or dumb? I don't want to say bad things about the deaf, dumb and the blind, because the deaf, dumb and the blind are people. They have feelings, they are human, and they have compassion. But here, even though you have eyes, you don't see, you have ears, you don't hear, you have no feelings. You never hear. But they put this there. Why? Because it's in favor of one side of the coin, one side of the parties. So there was a strong, voice coming from the chair of the G77 in China, which is now in the hands of Sudan. The negotiator, the ambassador, came out very strongly at a press conference and said, the Prime Minister of Denmark must stop this, cannot do this, don't be biased. This is supposed to be an inclusive process. In fact, for those of you who are interested, look at the speech of the Prime Minister of Denmark on the first day, welcoming ceremony. This process is transparent. I will ensure that there will be participation for all. It is inclusive. It is transparent. And then people, you see, many of us who go for these negotiations, when people say transparent, they mean untransparent. When they mean democratic, they mean undemocratic. They mean the complete opposite of what they mean, what they say. Yeah? So not do what they say, but do as they what they will not say. So it's double speak. So this has been exposed. And this, that there was anger in the halls when this was exposed. And the civil society of Africa were very, very angry. In particular, you must have heard of that. Particularly because the Danish text talks about a 2-degree goal, limiting temperature increase to not more than 2 degrees. And for Africa, 2 degrees means 3 degrees. And that means death, that means drought, that means a lot of suffering. So they were so angry, they went around the halls and they said, 2 degrees is suicide and genocide for Africa. And one Africa, 1 degree. That's what they were saying. So they were outraged. And they were nearly kicked out, of course, because this was a spontaneous protest. But luckily it did not happen. But the point being that civil society's voice is very critical. At moments like this, when the voice of the justice and climate justice must prevail, when our negotiators who are making progressive proposals are there, in fact, in many other forums, you have to go to your government to lobby them. Here the governments are lobbying us. Where are the voices of the progressive NGOs? Because the NGO community is divided in the halls of the Bella Center. You will find that many of the NGOs there, many of them, you will see, that even the carbon, the private sector is calls itself civil society. Businesses are called civil society. And many of some of, unfortunately, some of the NGOs only are, it's maybe perhaps they are not aware that a lot of the time they only look at the science of the problem. They do not, science means S-C-I-E-N-C-E. Oh, the IPCC says this, so therefore we have to do that. But they do not see that science must be coupled with equity, must be coupled with justice, that if you set a target, and like say, if you set a long-term global goal, you say emission reductions by 50% by 2050, which is not even enough. They say global goal, if that is the target, and if the developed world is only going to do 80%, that means the developing world has to take on the 20%. That sounds small, but 20% translates to 60% per capita that we have to have the burden. For the developed world, population will not double by 2050. So the developed world will have to do 80% cut per capita. The developing world will have to do 60% cut by per capita. Where is the justice of this? Totally unjust. So you lock in the global target, an inequity, which basically means the last remaining atmospheric space will be continued to be given to those who have over-occupied. It reminds me of the Palestinian struggle. And why do I say Palestine? Because we heard the Palestinians today speak at the Bella Center today. And they said, we are still not a party to the Kyoto Protocol. They're very happy to be here. And one day, when we get rid of the Israeli occupation, we will join the Kyoto Protocol. And they got an applause. Because it's so moving, their speech. They're still not recognized as a country. So why do I say Palestine? It's like taken over. The space is occupied. The occupied territories are there. And you want to occupy further. At the end, you squeeze whatever that is left. So where's the fairness? Where's the justice of this? So that's why in the Bella Center, our negotiators, many of our negotiators, not all, there are some countries who are in the hands of the developed countries. It's very obvious. Very, very obvious. Today in the halls, when there was this fight over whether the Kyoto Protocol should live or die, when many of the developing countries who are progressive were saying that the proposals of the industrial countries are bad, Colombia said, we want to hear their proposals also. Yeah? Colombia, Costa Rica, Chile. Yeah? And if you look at these countries are the people who signed the free trade agreements with the United States. Yeah? So you have the axis of that sphere. And the same that happens in Europe as well. You have those countries which are called on by the former colonial masters, and they listen. So and you also heard about how the Philippines government was put on, the president of the Philippines refused to put on its delegation the negotiator who from the Philippines who has been negotiating for the G77 in China. Her name is Bernardita Smuller. She hates the bank. She really is a very strong critic of the World Bank. And she was removed from the Philippine delegation by Gloria Macapagal Arroyo, yeah, famously known as GMA in the Philippines. The Filipino civil society were totally, totally outraged by that. But why did she do that? Ask Mary Lou from the Philippines and she'll give you the inside story of that. And it was probably because of pressure or because she wants to be good friends with the United States. So maybe the United States didn't put pressure. I don't know. Maybe, I don't know who, but Gloria decided that Bernadette Smuller should not be on the delegation. But she's back in the G77 anyway. So you see the kind of pressures that developing countries are being put through. The voices of those who fight are trying to be stifled, and yet their resolve continues. And I think if they were here, they would say, continue the big fight, make your voices louder, make the messages resonate from there, from the halls there to the halls of the Klima Forum to the streets of Copenhagen, so that the Prime Minister Rasmussen understands and hears, so that President Obama, when he lands, hears and understands, so that the developed countries cannot continue to do what they do, so that we lend voice to the progressive forces in the negotiations. So we don't know how it will play out next week, but we certainly hope that we will certainly be there. Many of you will have to be there. Let's voice, let's watch, and let's do this and keep up the struggle. The developing countries have not given up. We should not give up, and we will never give up, because all we have is us and our hope and our power and our strength, and nothing has ever stopped us. So nothing will stop us even now. So the more there is a challenge, the bigger our fight and our energy to keep struggling. Otherwise, we don't have any work to do. Yeah? Because we love the struggle and the challenge. So with that, I hope that once in a while we can continue to interact and keep people informed about what's happening. But do come to the Bella Center too. As sometimes it's important to watch the fight, sit in the halls and listen. And of course it sounds so technical and mumbo jumbo. But it doesn't matter, that our voice and our presence is very important. And it's important to carry those. Many of the actions inside have been very powerful. Not just like somebody today was saying, you know, in the morning as people were coming in, one group of people from Friends of the Earth, the action groups there, had very strong, powerful messages which said, save Kyoto Protocol, deep cuts. NX1 must, industrialized countries must do deep cuts. And then suddenly there was a group of people who took off their clothes and said 350 and 1.5, and that's all. They didn't say anything else. So all the reporters went to them, and nobody paid attention to this group of people. So I think we in civil society also, of course we know, we have to coordinate the messages so that they're very effective and that we do not confuse the messages that come out of the halls. So with that, I'm very, very happy to be part of this very important meeting.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Real World News.